We're going to make sure that whoever our guys are that we're getting, that we'll put them in the best place, you know, position to be successful.
Welcome to Jaguars Reporters, presented by TIAA Bank, with Brian Sexton, John Osher, Ashlyn Sullivan, and J.P. Shadrick.
Jaguars Reporters,
presented by TIAA Bank, starts right now.
Welcome in Jaguars Reporters Podcast. Ashlyn Sullivan, J.P. Shadrick, and John Osher here with you this week, a couple weeks before the NFL draft, gearing up for that. And that is our big focus, so I won't lie to you guys. And I was building Jaguars this week. Not a lot of talking points this week. It's all draft right now.
It's quiet. It's the calm before the storm, as we said last week, but it's kind of the same thing this week, too. I mean, You know, there's a few players around and doing their own thing, and then, like, the official offseason program starts, what, next week,
next
I guess?
Monday.
So there's
yep.
really not a lot happening right now. It's but there will be very soon, John.
Well, we got thrown a curveball a little bit. This was supposed to be week two of the first phase, and I think we sort of expected some access points and to talk to some players and intro-type stuff. And, you know, frankly, I keep going back to it. That's what it should be for new coaches, teams that change regimes. That's why the calendar feels like there's a little bit of a lag. It's normally we would have probably talked to Coach Meyer on the Tuesday or somebody with a voice for the team and then, you know, the quarterback or whoever their leaders are. So it sort of feels like that. And, again, I'm sure that the coaches and the people who are getting – who want to get this thing going – feel like that too. So it is a little bit of a lull right now.
Yeah, I can imagine it's a bit of an annoyance to not have this going right now. And that leads us into one of the talking points, which is the virtual programs start on Monday, the 19th. What does that look like? We're not quite sure. We saw what it was last season, and I think we all agree it probably will be a little bit of that until hopefully something changes where these guys can get on the field maybe after the draft, early May. But as of now, it's more teams meetings and trying to figure it out. But it seems like Coach Meyer is going to address his full team on Microsoft Teams.
Yeah, right. I mean, it feels like to me this is, you know, you can get in and work out.
Yeah.
It's still voluntary. We get that part. But if there are meetings, and there probably will be if it's phase one at some point, they will all be virtual. And I'm sure Urban is just glad to have something coming up.
Yeah.
I'm sure he has been chomping at the bit just to get in front of the team and get that message across. He's been crafting it and getting it ready to go. We've heard some of it in some public appearance things that he's done here, but, you know, he can be really good in front of a football team, but he hasn't been in front of the football team yet. He's been here since January, John.
So far, I may be wrong on this, this feels like last year in terms of they'll be able to meet virtually. It's not last year in the sense that the players can be in the building and they're working out, which they couldn't do last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's also last year in the sense that they're not on the field yet, but they wouldn't be anyway.
That's right.
They wouldn't be practicing in this phase two, and then in this phase one, and then there's a phase two where they can do one-on-one in a normal off season, where they can do one-on-one, where they can be on the field, but it's not OTAs like we think of them. You know, and just to clarify it for people, they wouldn't be in OTAs yet anyway.
Right. This is
they wouldn't
phase
be practicing.
One, right?
This wouldn't be that pseudo training camp thing.
No.
My understanding and expectation is they will get that. What I wonder and what I think will continue to be frustrating for a coach who wants to build culture, camaraderie, whatever you call it. I know he calls it culture, and I know he wants these players together in groups where he can talk to them and start getting a feel for them. I don't know if he's going to get that for a while, so he'll create it virtually.
Yeah, and frankly, there's probably a handful of players, if not more, that he probably hasn't met face-to-face yet. And that's going to be incredibly frustrating for a new head coach who started late January, and it's now almost middle of April.
Yeah, because some guys might not be in town. I mean,
yeah.
They might be elsewhere and just haven't been around, or that's just the nature of the NFL in the offseason.
But even the ones that he has met face-to-face, you know, in listening to him talk about this, there's just that you can't go down and hang out in your assistant coach's office for 25 minutes talking ball.
Yeah.
And
it's not allowed.
That's what drives them up the wall. And it should, because that's where, you know, he talked at the very beginning, I think it was in January, about in college you can get with the quarterback for these 2 months. And he said that's really where you develop a quarterback in college is during those 2 months right after a season. I'm sure it applies to other positions. A, the quarterback, I don't think it's that big a deal this year because the quarterback wasn't going to be here anyway. But not being able to have that hands-on, it is an adjustment for anybody who's not in the NFL because intrinsically, I always get questions about this. Well, if a player wants to, can he not come in and go down and talk to the linebackers coach about what he did or didn't do last year? Well, technically not really very much, you know, so that's really sort of weird and not fair, but it's put in to protect coaches and players from themselves, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. It's going to continue to be weird until we get some answers. So let's get
Flynn, sorry to interrupt. Because Flynn, we know the personalities of some of these guys.
Mm-hmm. Like,
it never stops churning above the shoulders for a lot of these football right. minds in here, right?
Yeah.
And so if there's not that rule in place, Ashlyn, you know,
there's no off season.
There's no off season at all. None. And that's why the players need it, and that's why the coaches need it too. You know, you have to have that implemented, or some organizations will never let off the gas.
Yeah, and it is promising. I will say we've been in this building and we've seen guys like DJ Chark, Josh Allen, a bunch of the wide receivers here mm-hmm. almost every single day, taking advantage of being able to come in for that workout.
Yeah.
Wasn't the case last year, so promising to see that you're at least getting that. All right, JP Shattuck, let's get into big things.
That's me. Let's get started. Hey, the draft party has been announced.
Woo!
Right? Finally, Thursday.
Schlynn's ready for it.
April 29th. It's right. The Schlynn Show is what it's going to be. She's going to be fantastic out on the stage inside TIAA Bank Field. And it's the Travel Camp RV Duval Draft 2021. And you know what? It's great to have people back in the building again. We had some people here for the season last year, but it's been a little while. So, and it's going to be a night to remember. I mean, it's Trevor Lawrence, for most likely, coming in as the number one pick and another first-round pick later in the night. It's a long evening inside TIAA Bank Field, but it's going to be one of those where I think you really want to be here for it because it's one of those milestone moments, really it could be in franchise history, that you'll remember and you'll say, hey, I was there the night Trevor Lawrence, or whoever the first pick is, was drafted. So that's my big thing, number one. I'm fired up, Schlynn, about this.
I'm excited, too. I think you can expect a big crowd, one, because of the Trevor Lawrence thing, but two, there just hasn't been a sports event in Jacksonville in so long. And even if you're not the biggest Jaguars fan, just be able to come and be in person with people, I think, is a huge deal.
Well, I can remember, JP, I think you were there. If you weren't there, you were certainly in the building, but I can remember when they picked Jalen Ramsey. Remember the Jalen Ramsey's played.
I heard
the
of
Jaguars
him. Yeah,
the, back injury.
I know him.
He's an old pro, right?
Until the back injuries.
Put
him back.
Struggle.
But we were sitting out about 20 feet away from here, by the coaches' offices, and we had an impromptu setup for Jaguars.com. I think you were probably doing radio.
I don't. I was probably here. I don't know.
But
yeah. Been a while.
You probably.
I was around.
Where were you, JP?
I was in the building that night. I'm sure I was.
Were you working even?
But the roar from the crowd when they picked Jalen Ramsey, which was a big deal, Florida State guy, but he was a cornerback. And I can't imagine what the roar, mm-hmm. what the energy level will be when they pick whoever quarterback they're going to pick. it'll be... I would expect the most exciting event outside of most exciting football event outside of a game day.
Yeah.
In Jaguars history, I can't imagine another.
It's got to be ever.
Ever.
In this franchise's history, yes.
Well, even I was talking to the Action Sports Jax guys over the weekend when we were talking about even when Josh Allen was picked, what a huge deal that was because the Raiders were before, and you thought, mm-hmm. oh, well, they're going to take that tight end out of Iowa, T.J. Hockenson. So we'll be ready for that. There's no chance. And when the Raiders passed on Josh Allen, there was like this hush of the crowd thinking, is this actually going to happen? And it was a huge moment, like incredibly loud at Daly's Place. And
but realistically, there's probably 40% of that crowd didn't know who Josh Allen was.
Right, but the hardcore football fan thinking, is this actually going to happen?
Everybody in that crowd is going to know. And that's just, you know, it's going to be an energy, no doubt.
Yes, it will. All right, let's go to defense. John Osier.
Yeah, and I'm still a bit lost in the woods. I talked to Joe Cullen last week, so I'm kind of excited about it. But
why are you lost in the woods?
He's a guy that can get you excited.
Yeah, the all off season, JP and Schlen, all I hear about is the defensive scheme, what they're going to play. Is it going to be 3-4? Is it going to be 4-3? And I've been hearing it for 3 or 4 years because everybody hated Todd Wash. They didn't want the 4-3. All the fans were tired of it. So there's this magic to the 3-4. Oh, we got to go 3-4. Well, I talked to Joe, and I said, Joe, because that's his name. I said, Joe, what is this defense going to look like? How do you describe it? And for all the people who think that when I answer these questions that I'm trying to dodge whether it's going to be a 3-4 or a 4-3 or whether they're trying to dodge it, it's not. It's going to have base elements of a 3-4, but he said the reality is it does not fit in either a 3-4 or a 4-3. It has different looks based on the personnel on the field and based on what the other team is doing. When they play the Tennessee Titans, it's going to have a different look than when they play a spread offense. It's going to have different personnel. It may look more like a 4-3. It may look more it's going to look different in the back. So I don't understand why we just can't call it a hybrid.
Hybrid is what it is.
Yeah, right. But
that's what Joe said it was. Nobody said it all offseason.
He said it in January.
Nobody wants to hear it, though.
Right. It's like, you just don't know yet. That's why you're calling it a hybrid.
On Madden, you can click 3-4 defense or 4-3 defense, the square button on PlayStation.
So
boom,
Madden
you're in
it for us.
Boom.
Right.
I don't know. I'm just saying. Like, that's right. It's that simple on that. It's not that simple
in real
football.
That's a video game, JP.
I know.
And
that's the whole point.
Their base defense.
It's hybrid.
Probably has the more of a 3-4 element. Mm-hmm. But he said there's going to be times where their base defense looks like a 4-3. You know, it's going to have that look.
Put the best players on the field.
And I said, so we can't go back to the Curly Culp days where there's a straight nose, four linebackers, and Robert Brazil's on the outside. And that's an old Houston Oilers reference. So the Houston Oilers.
I'm aware of the Houston Oilers.
Brazil was in the Hall of Fame a couple years ago.
So it's – in the old days, this worked. In the old days, you played a 3-4 defense, and in past situations – you brought in one nickel corner, and you pulled out one linebacker for him. And that was your entire defense. There's so many packages now, and they have different packages.
And 70% of the time you run a nickel anyway on defense.
Yeah. The interesting thing from my conversation with Joe, he loves Miles Jack now. Why wouldn't you as a football coach? But I've gotten a lot of questions about where does he fit in this defense. And Joe had a couple answers. He said, well, we're going to fit him.
Make it work.
And, be a place.
But it will be exciting to watch how they use Miles Jack, because fear not that he's going to have a role in this thing. So that's my big thing, Shalane.
That's exciting.
Woo!
Is Joe calling on the Ozone podcast?
He's not. At some point, I hope he will be, but this was more Dave DeCandis and I talked to him. Dave was talking to him about some questions for video. I was able to sit in and talk to him afterwards. So
nice.
It'll be – I think JP's already read it. I think I sent it to you Saturday.
No, JP. Not yet. Yeah, okay. I haven't read it yet. Right. It'll be up in a little while on Jaguars.
He's waiting on the edge of his seat.
I got you. Well,
thanks for the preview, though.
I guess JP hasn't read it.
I guess it's not that good after all. Well, speaking of the Ozone podcast, I listened to offensive coordinator Daryl Bevel's Ozone podcast with Ozone himself. And what stood out to me is all these connections with this team, especially with the coaching staff to head coach Urban Meyer. I still find it really interesting that there's not a connection there. And when Coach Meyer said on The Hunt that Coach Bevel blew him away in his interviews and that's the reason he got the job, he had other guys in mind for this job and he was that good, is promising for your offensive coordinator. But I still find it so interesting that something as high profile as an offensive coordinator has no connection to the head coach.
Well, and I think it speaks to an intriguing thing. So, you know, when you cover this league and you cover a team, you learn a lot about the person coaching it. And you can hear about a guy before he gets here. And we had all heard different things about Urban Meyer. And there are perceptions of him, college coach, this guy coming in, what he was. What has struck me, what struck me from the very beginning was his – what you heard and thought was that he was sort of a guy who was my way or the highway and came in and I know what's best and I'm going to do it this way. For better or for worse, that was sort of the thing. Well, that hasn't been the impression I've gotten from listening to him at all.
So far, no.
And no. I think Bevel is a little bit of an example of that. He didn't know Bevel. Urban coached with a lot of people. I'm sure there was somebody who could have coordinated this offense that he knew from 25 years ago that he could have easily picked up the phone and said, hey, you're the guy. But he said wanted to hire the best guy, mm-hmm. left his mind open, and I think that speaks to what he's done in a lot of cases from what I've heard about. He wants to know what works right, is willing to listen. Okay, well, we're going to do this because this is the best way to do it. It may not be the way I've done it. I may not know this person. But so I think credit to him for that. And I think there is a small connection between the two. I want to say there's a Brad Childress connection.
Okay.
From way back. And I could be wrong on that, that Urban learned a lot from Brad Childress when he was young. And I think Bevel did too. So I think there's some foundation.
It's not
there.
A direct connection, but there's a...
Right, but I
a
think
branch
there is
in some tree somewhere. That
a foundation, which in coaching, everybody has a connection somehow. But, JP.
Well, I think it made sense. You know, there's a mix on this coaching staff of guys that Urban knew from the college days, obviously. Charlie Strong's one of those guys, you know. But it felt like he really needed NFL veteran coaching experience at the highest levels of the coaching staff, the guys who immediately report to Urban Meyer. Everybody reports to Urban. I get it. But the coordinators especially. Cullen's been in the league forever. It's his first chance to be a coordinator, though. So, you know, but he's getting that opportunity. Bevel's been in the league for even longer as a position coach and a coordinator and then the interim head coach last year in Detroit. So having the experience of working in the NFL for this long, knowing how to approach players, knowing how to present an offense or a defensive package to a team, I think is key for Urban. Not that he doesn't know how to do that, but maybe it's a different response in the NFL than he might be expecting from the college days. So having that veteran NFL experience at the coordinator level, I think, was important for Urban.
For sure. And that leads us right into, did you hear this? Speaking of the offensive coordinator, he joined John Osier on the Ozone Podcast.
Kind of have feelings of what he likes, what he wants to do, where he's at. But then, you know, being able to blend, I guess, where Brian's been, where I've been, and George has been, I think just being able to blend all that together to be able to come up with the best plan. And the plan starts one way, and then once you start getting the players and start, you know, putting those players in, and that play, then that plan can morph, you know, and we're going to make sure that whoever our guys are that we're getting, that we'll put them in the best position to be successful. But right now, you know, what is our core? What's our base? Where are we going to start when day one when they walk in here? And then the more we get to know them, then the more it will start to move around.
So like we said, all about connections, and he was talking about how this is all going to work with blending all of these new coaches. But I like how he included offensive line coach George Warhop in here, who's not the new guy, mm-hmm. but it's still somewhat new because he's around all these new people. How is this going to work all together, having one clear message, which is very clear, is mm-hmm. very, very important to Coach Meyer, one clear message of how this is going to work.
Well, Bevel made it clear that Bevel, Schottenheimer, Warhop, you know, and all the offensive coaches, but it sounded like particularly those three have a huge voice in how this is being installed. It's always fascinating to me, and this is a little bit lost in the weeds, but as I was talking to Daryl, it always fascinates me when a new coordinator comes in. I would love once to sit in on meetings mm-hmm. as you put together an offense. And he said it's literally page by page where they go in, they say, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to huddle this way. We're going to have this. And, okay, when we line up this way, what are we going to name it? Mm-hmm. And Daryl said there are some things when they were with the Seahawks, because him and Brian Schottenheimer both worked for the Seahawks. Schottenheimer was the coordinator at the Seahawks after Bevel, so they used a lot of that language. So he said there will be some language like that. But this is also an opportunity. If they weren't comfortable with what something was called, they can change it. So they've been able to get some situations where they were calling one thing three words. Well, now they're calling it one word. Mm-hmm. So just the way you name it, they're basically taking a bunch of different languages and making them one and making it the Jaguars playbook. So everybody loves to talk about, well, they're running the Seahawks offense or they're running the Minnesota Vikings offense. It really doesn't work that way. There's always elements in every offense, and that's how the league sort of evolves over time. So it's a fascinating time, and just once I'd love to see how those pages actually came. It's probably not a page anymore, Shlin. It's probably that.
It's a PDF.
You young kids use like PowerPoint, right? Isn't that what it is?
I would think it's a PDF. Yes.
There's an app. You can download that on the App Store. But, you know, it's just wait until whatever quarterback is selected first overall shows up on site too, right? Because he'll have a say in how things, a little bit of a say.
Sure.
You know,
you'd hope, yeah.
Because it's built around him and his strengths and what he can and can't communicate and process and all that.
It must stink for them not knowing who the quarterback's
got. I bet they have seven different offenses for all the seven different choices.
It really is.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned Warhop, and I didn't even think about this till the other day, but Warhop and Urban were at Cincinnati together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was a couple years difference there, but that's their connection that goes way back. So, you know, don't think that it's, oh, he's the holdover, here's the new guy. Warhops and all those guys are here for a reason because they understand how to get things going together on a new group.
Yeah, with Warhop, I think after talking with Cam Robinson and them keeping that group together, I thought it was so crucial to keep him, Coach Warhop. Like, that was a no-brainer to have him
stay. We have an incredible situation where the coach and the five offensive linemen are going into their fifth year. I mean, I'm sorry. Their third year starting together now.
That's almost unheard of.
It's a long time in the NFL, and you would hope that you see benefits of that continuity. And there's certainly a method to that madness where you have a young quarterback coming in. You've got to think that that's a major reason for keeping that together and for having that continuity.
Could not agree more. All right, everyone ask. Trevor Lawrence, speaking of him, a married man. Got married this past weekend to his lovely wife, Marissa. And if you don't follow
Did you watch it live online?
Was there a live stream that I didn't know about?
I thought you would know.
No.
Okay.
I don't think
you weren't invited?
No. Rude, right?
John turned it down.
I thought for sure I'd be on the list.
John was busy. He couldn't make it.
Anywho, if you want to see great content, follow his wife on Instagram. She posts all the wedding pics. You get all the details that way. Trevor posts very little, which I think none of us are surprised by
He's
that.
He's a guy's guy.
Yeah. He doesn't have time for Instagram. No. Marissa does.
Well, the huge takeaway, I think everybody sort of knows Jaguars Twitter bought them the toaster.
Awesome. Smart
$300
toaster.
$300
toaster? Yeah.
With a flat screen.
I mean, that's fantastic. And as much as, you know, JP, I mean, now JP's not as old. I'm the old man, so I can sit here and say, social media, it's the worst, you know. But for all the weirdness and sometimes negative things that the social media bring, this is the sort of thing that without social media would never happen. We're living in an incredibly strange interactive time where something like this could happen. For whatever Jaguars Twitter specifically, Twitter in general, forever toxic it can be sometimes, this is an example of how it's absolutely wonderful.
So I guess they got a toaster, so they got a vacuum cleaner, and then the rest goes to a charity of Trevor Lawrence's choice.
I think, which
is pretty cool, man.
That's
really
it's raised over $7,000.
$7,000.
Yes. Yeah. It raised over, as of 12 hours ago, they were over $7,000.
And it couldn't be more fun.
Yeah, that's awesome.
What does a $300 toaster not do, I guess? It better do everything.
Of course it does. This will be in his lovely home in Ponte Vedra.
It better pull the toast out and do it itself.
It better butter it with butter, jelly, after the fact, too.
It would be walking my dog.
Exactly.
It would
yes, overall, very cool. And congrats to the newlyweds.
Congratulations.
Very, very cool.
All if right, he John. Shows up here. I mean, we might, you know, there might be
another
direction. Well,
if not, we're just congratulating what seems to be a good guy.
Now, that would be a story. Do they take the toaster back if he's not?
Oh, my gosh. The audacity and drama. Go on, John.
Okay. Mine's not as fun, but I'm not as fun as Ashland's.
That's a fact.
It makes
Who
sense.
Is?
Second-year players always take a big jump, or they should take
usually,
a big jump.
Usually, yeah. Sometimes.
And this is a big time for that because it's the off-season where they usually get a chance to take that big jump. So even though the off-season really hasn't begun and we don't know what it's going to look like, who do we believe will take the biggest such second-year jump, Schlen? Who do you – and I'll be the old interviewer where I'll rephrase the question.
Okay, I'm ready.
What second-year player – meaning somebody who was a rookie last year, Schlen, would improve the most this year. Could be James Robinson. It could be any of the rookies last year.
Right? Would you like to list them all?
What are you doing? The world.
I'm going to go Kalyvon Chaisson. And I'm going to go even further and say I think he has to make a jump. I think this was a guy that was very hyped up after we drafted him, and overall, I think a lot had to do with Josh Allen and how he played last year. But I would like to see Kalyvon, especially if they go to a 3-4 hybrid.
Kind of back in.
Yeah.
Kind of back in.
Didn't
see
he, didn't he tweet 3-4 right after the changes?
He did do that.
Yeah.
So, yes,
following
I expect
he didn't tweet hybrid?
No.
I don't think he tweeted hybrid.
I expect Kalyvon Chaisson to make a huge jump this year, and I think he has to.
Give me Laviska Shenault. And, you know, I know he's banged up a bunch last year and was in college, too. That was kind of his thing. He was beat up a little bit, but that's just the way he plays. He's a big body receiver, takes a lot of hits. Doesn't hit the ground a lot, by the way, when he takes those hits. So maybe this offseason, he got a taste of it last year in his rookie year, how physical the game is here in the NFL level. The offseason priorities for him to keep his body in great shape and all that, I think, is big to really have an idea. So he didn't have that last offseason, and obviously they didn't have anything last offseason. He was a rookie anyway. So now he's had a season of it. He has the offseason to build up and get ready. Let's see if he's on the field, if anybody's on the field in a team capacity this year. I think that would help him some. But it's more for me with him about the physical part of the game. Can he get through the rigors of a 17-game schedule now in the NFL? Because that was a big question for him coming in. So I think for him it'll be big this year.
I agree with you. I think it's going to be Shenault. I will speak to Schlen's in that Chaisson does need the jump, and he also needs the off-season perhaps more than any other player.
I was going to say the same thing because that him – in the X's and O's, on the field,
right.
How it works,
technique.
How it looks, how it feels, technique, all that.
Yeah.
Didn't have any of that.
Yeah, 8 or 9 weeks or the 4 weeks of just not being able to be on the field with his hand on the ground, however they're going to use him.
Well, that wouldn't be 3-4. That would be 4-3.
Right.
I'm kidding.
I thought just set him back last year. For the purpose of this, since you guys both discussed those players, C.J. Henderson needs to, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's right. It's a really good one.
If he's good, if he's what he's supposed to be, their corners are pretty good.
Yeah.
If he's the inconsistent version we saw at times last year, if he's not the number 9 overall pick in the draft, then all of a sudden the secondary looks and feels a lot different. I think your confidence in the secondary – if you knew that he was going to play to the level that he played against the Colts in week 1 and was number 9 pick, I think you'd be sitting there saying, you know what, maybe one more piece at safety, and I really love this secondary.
Yeah.
Not knowing about CJ, I think he's the linchpin, so to speak. I think he's the guy that if he's good, they're good. If he's not, then I think they have some work to do next offseason. I think he's going to be good.
Yeah.
Week one CJ is what you drafted, though.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Why you drafted.
And that was pre-injury, coming off a big injury. Well, you know Shaquille Griffin's going to be the lockdown on one side. You're not worried about that. So, yeah.
Better be.
All your questions are with CJ Henderson. And at first, I always felt like there was so much pressure on C.J. Henderson, almost too much, because look at the group he was with, mm-hmm. with Trey Herndon and Sidney Jones, and it was, all right, well, C.J., you got to carry all of this. Mm-hmm. Now with Shaquille Griffin on the other side, it's got to be a weight off his shoulders mm-hmm. to have a guy like that.
Should be.
Yeah.
Should be.
Yeah, I think a part of how he handles that, I think, was interesting, too, above the shoulders, right? I know he's banged up and had some things going on, but the circumstances around him were not ideal.
Not at all, no.
But when are they ideal? It doesn't – I mean, that's life, you know? I mean, sometimes you have to battle through, and I think that part of the game for him – I think will be key moving forward. Can he handle some adversity around him? And how does he respond to some of that? Because there was plenty of adversity last year on this defense.
Yeah, talk about a rookie year.
I think that'll be interesting for a lot of players. I think Cam Robinson falls into that a little bit. There's a lot of players that I'll be interested this year to see. Now that things are going in a different direction. Last year with 1-15, even at the start of the year, you wondered sort of, you know, if everybody was in lockstep.
Yeah.
With all the COVID stuff and with the, you know, they had brought everybody back after 6-10. There never, it never felt new. It never felt like there was energy. So now that things are going in a different direction and it feels like everybody knows what they're supposed to buy into, how much will that help some of the players who were inconsistent? How much will it help guys who weren't quite where you hoped they would be? I think you'll see some guys improve because everything around them is improving. There can be that sort of snowball effect. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if guys like CJ and Cam won't benefit from that as well.
For sure. All right, JP, what you got?
Okay, well, you mentioned earlier that Trevor Lawrence is not a big Instagram guy.
No.
But I know one guy who is.
J.P. Shattuck.
Gardner Minshew II is a big Instagram guy. He put out some photos, I think, over the weekend with a brand new, well, an updated mullet haircut. So my question, and everyone asks, is would you ever consider a mullet haircut, John?
Well, I lived through the
so scared about
days
this.
When mullet was a thing.
I don't like this at all.
And I'm from where mullet is still a thing, but yeah, go ahead.
I did not. I went ponytail, mm-hmm. 95, the inaugural season, I celebrated with a ponytail.
Mm-hmm.
So that's as close as I got to a mullet. I can't pull a mullet off. Schlen could pull a mullet off.
My hair might even look like a mullet this morning. It's an off-camera day. Lord knows what you're getting.
It does not look anything close no. to a mullet. Everyone.
But in the 90s, when I started out the paper, mullet was more common than not in that era. It was, what was it, a tight in front? Or
well, it's business in the front, party in the back.
Right, yeah. Right. That was sort of the, and my cohort, Pete Prisco, almost had a mullet.
Did
he really?
Wasn't quite a mullet, but it was, it was a business in front, long in the back. It was, there are photos. There are photos.
High school, I had long hair down, but we couldn't have our collar because of school rule. It was a public school rule. You can only have it down to there. So I would have gone longer, but it was very thick. But I never thought about, you know, business in the front, party in the back. I was just party everywhere. Right?
Business in front, party in the back, maybe one of the best lines.
It's pretty good, right?
Everyone knows it.
But, you know, there was – I'm from that area, from outside of Birmingham,
sure.
Right? That's just been – that's you go certain places out there, and this is what it is.
So I guess the answer to the question for you is would consider
– No. I would not consider.
Oh, you would not. Okay.
I would not consider. I can't now. I can't do much now.
Which is what I was getting.
It's what it is. I've kind of given up the battle. It's over. The war is over in terms of hair.
Interesting tidbit is Gardner posted on his Instagram asking who can handle this mullet, and apparently he had – hundreds of hairdressers respond, oh, pick me to cut your hair. And he went with a guy that cuts a lot of the Jaguar staff haircuts in Jacksonville Beach. So he had the trust of like the equipment guys and the trainers went that route. And now look at him. Good as new.
And he was like leaned up against like some fence post with his
that was a photo
shirt
shoot.
All open. It's like, all he needs now is like a country music album like Terry Bradshaw or something.
Yeah, it was something. You know. It was
complete the whole look.
Something.
Yeah, it's something.
Yeah.
It's something, all right.
All right, and what better way to end it than with that? Jaguars Reporters Podcast. Stay tuned, Jaguars.com, Jaguars Dry Time, Jaguars Happy Hour, The Hunt, new episode coming here soon in the next few weeks. Stay tuned. We'll see you next Monday on the next Jaguars Reporters.